1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me? Okay. Let's get started. Welcome. Thanks for coming. This session is about the web application proxy. It's a completely new technology in Windows Server. And it's actually a continuation, a follow-on to a series of sessions that we've done in the week, this week. How many of you attended the morning session about ADFS? Show of hands. All right. Lots of people. Good. So in this session, we're going to focus specifically on the proxy technology. We're going to showcase the technology. The goal here is to walk through the various pieces of the technology and do demos and kind of show that to you. And we'd be happy to get questions throughout the session, or if you prefer, after the session. My name is Shai Kariv, and my colleague here sitting here is Avi Carmon. And for anyone who prefers, you can either even send us email after the presentation to these addresses that we show up here. So the game plan for today is we're going to do some sort of high-level view on what's new with remote access in Windows Server and System Center with the R2 release. And then we're going to drill down on the proxy specifically and talk about the flows and the pre-authentication and some of the scenarios and the data flows, and then break for demos, come back from the demos, take some time to talk about operability and design considerations, address a bunch of questions that often come up in this context. And then I'm going to talk as clearly as I can about the relation of this technology to servers that we have out there today, like UEG and TMG and ARR and a bunch of other servers, because I know there's quite some questions on that as well. So as the slide builds up, I'm going to start talking about it from left to right. Some of you have seen that already this week in the morning session or in other sessions as well. Some other folks see that for the first time. So let me take a few minutes and explain that. The purpose here is to kind of explain what we do in Windows Server and System Center for remote access. And so it all starts with the user at the left-hand side of the screen. User, as we know, is using these modern devices that typically are personally owned, not necessarily managed by corporate IT, not even domain joined. And that's the whole phenomena of BYO, device, bring your own device. And those could be Windows or non-Windows devices, and specifically iOS and Android are out there, and people use them. And you know, we on the server side build technologies here to enable people or employees with such devices to have a great experience, even when they try to connect to work and do work stuff. And so there's two levels here of connecting the device to the workplace and doing work on that device. The sort of the base level is users can register their device to and make it known to Active Directory. And we call that device registration or workplace joined. And we kind of talked about that throughout the week, this new concept that is different than full domain joined. And we call it workplace joined. We're going to talk about that later today. We're going to show some demos of that as well. In a nutshell, for those who haven't attended the session throughout the week, this is a means for registering the device in Active Directory. It's not a computer object, it's a new object, it's called a device object, doesn't have a security principle associated with it. And at the end of that registration flow, there's a certificate that ends up in the device that knows to authenticate later on the device when there's requests that come in from the device to access applications on the corporate applications. There's a certificate that resides on the device and knows to, and there's association of that certificate to the device and the user who registered the device. We're going to come back to that and talk a little bit more about that later on. So that concept is called device registration or workplace joined devices, and that's within Windows Server. Now, on top of that, there's a whole aspect of managing the device, you know, things like mobile device management and policies and all that. You don't get them with Windows, or you don't get them with this concept of workplace joined. Workplace joined does not give you, intentionally, does not give you full-blown device management or things like running group policies on your device and things like that. That's why it's different than domain joined. If you want to have those types of scenarios, then you probably are looking for a mobile device management solution, and the Microsoft stack has System Center, and specifically Windows Intune, which is the cloud service that we offer on top of Windows Server to manage your devices. Windows Intune comes with an agent that runs on the device. It knows to do things like device health, making sure it runs AV, and things like that. And we're going to focus in this session not so much about Windows Intune and System Center, but more on the Windows Server remote access technologies. So, and if we continue talking about that and we move our way rightward on the screen, then really when customers talk with us about remote access technologies or the spectrum of remote access, we hear about mainly three different technologies or buckets of thinking about remote access. The first one is at the bottom, we call it remote access, which is simply VPN or direct access could be a flavor of that, which is something we had in Windows Server 2012 already, and we continue to evolve it and invest in it. And that people like VPN. It's a good solution, gives you connectivity for those types of devices as well. Sometimes you need to have VPN clients on those devices, of course, and it covers the broad spectrum of line of business applications, whether they're accessible over HTTP or other protocols. It gives you full network connectivity, and it continues to exist and continues to live. On top of that, some customers think that specifically for those types of modern devices that are personally owned and not managed by the corporate, it's not secure enough to just grant them VPN access to the entire network. And so we came up with this notion of reverse proxy, which we call web application proxy, and we built it into the platform. And so by that, we get things like selective publishing. So you get to choose as an admin what applications you want to publish, and only for those applications people will have access. And not only that, you can have specific authentication and authorization rules per application. So it's not an all or nothing approach, it's more a selective approach. And we're going to talk, the rest of the session basically talks about that, so we're going to drill in much more about web application proxy. So again, it's more constrained in terms of the protocols, it's more future looking, we're talking web protocols only, HTTP and HTTPS, but it gives you this selective publishing and additional services that we're going to talk about in the next slides. Now, the third category of remote access is the VDI type remote access, where these devices don't get the real data downloaded onto the device, but rather only the UI. Could be useful for hypersensitive business applications. The issue sometimes with those types of access scenarios is that people prefer the sort of the native rich experience of the device, and they typically don't get that with just downloading the UI. So, but it's a spectrum. There's three main categories, and I think we'll continue to see all three of those evolve in the marketplace. So that's sort of the very high-level picture of remote access in Windows Server. Now, let's continue and talk specifically about web application proxy. One way of looking at that is there's two people who play a role here. One is the information worker. That guy just wants his productivity to get his job done. They want to access corporate applications from everywhere, from the coffee shop, from their home network, and so on, using their device, using the rich experience of the device, and so on. The device, as we said, could be unmanaged, not joined to a domain, and the users expect to have basic things that they got used to in the enterprise space, like single sign-on, obviously. Now, on the other hand, we have the IT person. That guy wants to manage risks, especially given that those devices are semi-trusted or not even trusted at all. Selectively publish applications is a key thing that we've talked about. Controlling the access, not only per application, but also per the user, per the device, if the device is registered. Okay. and per the network location. So you can come up, and we showed it this morning, we're going to touch on that later today. You can come up with access policy that takes into account all these four things and kind of grant access differently depending if you're coming from outside the network or from inside, from a registered device or an unregistered device, who you are, the user group that you belong to, and the application that you're trying to access. So that's kind of powerful and kind of different than the other two types of remote access categories that I showed in the previous slide. Pre-authentication, we're going to talk more about that today. That's one of the key value propositions that the web application proxy does. It authenticates the request before it lets it route through to the back end of your organization. And the other interesting things here, I think, you don't have to change anything in terms of the existing line of business applications that you already have deployed. And also, you don't have to change anything on the device itself. It's clientless. We're talking about server technology that doesn't rely on anything that you have to install or manage on the device itself. Now, that specific point is a little bit different than similar products that we had as a company in the past, outside of Windows. But you know, you can think of other Microsoft products like UAG or TMG. How many people here are familiar with UAG, for example? And with TMG? All right, quite a few. Good. We're going to come back and talk a lot more about those. But that thing is different. So we kind of took a design point of coming up with a very sort of simple and generic design, server technology, HTTP protocols, not tailored specifically to each individual backend application or each individual front-end device that's coming. So if the application is on top of HTTP, and if the device honors that, then things should work. We don't have specific clients for every type of device. Those things you'll get with Windows Intune, as I mentioned in the other slide. So further drill down, and I just kind of want to walk through all the services that we provide. We're going to have a few slides like that. Let me take a minute and walk through what I call sometimes I call it connectivity services or reverse proxy services. So sort of the base level services that you get with the system, I'm going to walk one by one. So the first thing that comes with reverse proxy is you get network isolation. You always get this broker gateway that stands between the original incoming HTTP request and from the client and the one that goes against your backend application. So we always terminate the connection and issue a new one towards the backend. And that by itself, I think, is a good security measure. Now, there's a couple interesting use cases. I mentioned pre-authentication. Pre-authentication is optional. We'll talk about that in a second. But if you don't do pre-authentication and we just let the traffic through, we call it pass-through mode. Obviously, even in pass-through mode, we terminate the connection at the edge of the network and create a new back-end-facing HTTP connection. So we do that both in pass-through and if you have pre-authentication done at the edge. In both cases, you have the network separation type of security measure, if you will. We talked about selective publishing per internal application endpoint. Web protocols, I already mentioned, HTTP and HTTPS only, and sort of the scoping decision there was that if you look at it, an enterprise and sort of the trend future looking is to go and build these new types of LOB enterprise applications that are supposed to be accessed by these modern devices on top of these HTTP protocols and not so much over legacy protocols. All right, the other way of thinking about the value in a reverse proxy is you can see it as a centralized sort of access point that controls access to everything, all the incoming requests to your organization. So things like throttling and queuing and stuff like that, you don't have to deal with those things individually at the back-end application level. Or the other example would be logs, audit logs, if you want to kind of see who is attempting to access applications. So without a reverse proxy, if you just punch a hole through the firewall, you can still do those things, but you have to kind of go specifically to your individual backend applications that are being accessed. Whereas with a reverse proxy, you have a gateway layer that provides all these centralized logs and centralized access policies and centralized throttling to your organization, which we hear from customers is useful or viewed as another sort of security measure when they think about securing the access into their back-end applications. URL translation, typically a hot topic. So there is this service of translating the URL such that well-written applications, corporate applications, can remain with their internal known, non-fully qualified domain name URL, just like in the example there, HTTP HR. So in this release, we scoped down that specific feature, and we provide header-level translation only. So what it means is that we don't translate in this release, we don't translate URLs in the body of the request. So if the application is not well-written and use absolute URLs, for example, you will have issues publishing that application through the web application proxy. Now, I know this is a very hot topic, and I've already got questions about that this week, so I'll say it's very high on our list to come back to that and address that and actually deliver on full URL translation, or at least body-level URL translation in the follow-on release after R2. So I just want to be upfront about those things and tell you what's included and what's coming next. And so the other thing is about when you think about publishing the endpoints externally, then in this release we're insisting that you're going to publish securely. So only HTTPS is published externally, even if the internal application is over HTTP. So if you look back at the example, HTTP WAC HR could be the internal URL of your line of business application. When you go ahead and publish that externally, you will have to use something like HTTPS WAC, and then something like a fully qualified domain name, obviously HR dot, say, contasa.com or something along those lines. And so that example that I just gave will work because you got URL translation at the header level and you got HTTPS externally and HTTP internally. Now, just to be upfront, I mean, we already heard some feedback this week about, hey, why not allow, you know, publishing externally over HTTP if the application is not, you know, doesn't really require authentication. You know, some people have those scenarios where the line of business application doesn't really require authentication, doesn't require pre-authentication, it'll be configured with pass-through mode. So in those cases, people would like to kind of save the trouble of bothering with certs, stuff like that, and just publish over pure HTTP. And by the way, I'd love to kind of get some feedback from folks. If they have cases like that, we can come to me and talk after the presentation. But anyways, that pure HTTP publishing, again, to be crisp, is not supported in this release, but it's going to be high on our list to support it in the follow-on release since we got this feedback pretty recently. But again, I'd be interested to hear more from folks about this specific point after the presentation. The other thing we have here is, as I said, HTTPS to HTTP translation. That works. I gave the example with the HTTP HR case. And then the other important thing is that the web application proxy includes a component which is actually a specialized proxy for ADFS. For those who know ADFS, how many people are familiar with ADFS 2.0? Okay, so around 60-70% maybe. So good. So now ADFS proxy is just part, it's just an internal part of the web application proxy. So if you upgrade from Windows Server to 2012 Gold to R2, then you'll see that there's no longer a service role called ADFS proxy. It's going to be within the web application proxy role. So it's going to be an internal thing. There's nothing really too much to manage there or something like that. We'll see that in the demo as well. So that's about reverse proxy services. Now, pre-authentication. I think the first thing that we want to say about pre-authentication is that it's optional, because many times I get this confusion where people ask me, hey, you know, web application proxies support this or that, and what they mean by that is whether there's pre-authentication for specific flows. So even if there's no pre-authentication for some specific flows, you know, pre-authentication itself is optional. As I said, you can pass through the incoming request to the back end, or you can decide to do front end authentication at the network edge before you let the traffic route into the back end. Okay, we said it's based on the user identity, device identity, application being accessed, and network location. We talked about that already. So the way this works is the web application proxy that's deployed typically at the edge of the network in the DMZ has this interplay, this dependency on ADFS in the backend. There's a tight dependency. I just want to call that out in terms of deployment. Web application proxy with pre-authentication works together with ADFS in the backend. ADFS is the authentication server and provides security token services to web application proxy for the pre-authentication to work. Okay, single sign-on as well. We're going to see that, obviously, to kind of avoid prompting users, again, for credentials. So everything you used to have within the corporate environment in terms of single sign-on will work, or the goal is that this will work from those types of devices coming from the external internet. And then specifically this morning, we took time to show you some of the authentication policies and the IT controls and how to do all these things. Smart card is a question that often comes up. So that's supported, the phone authentication, phone factor, the Windows Azure Active Authentication, it's called these days, can plug into that as well. And again, we kind of talked about that this morning, including soft password lookup. And I'm just calling this out because these are frequently asked questions. So that's about pre-authentication. The other important piece in pre-authentication is what exactly is supported. So I often get this question about, hey, do you support Exchange, for example, right? So Exchange scenarios actually break to a bunch of different things. So let's just walk one by one what's supported with pre-authentication today. And so I think perhaps the most important authentication scheme that's supported is Kerberos. And so that's not, people don't often think about that, but most of the, I would claim that most of the enterprise line of business applications today expect Kerberos authentication. They were built for being used within the corporate network. And so what web application proxy allows you to do, and that's what I'm trying to kind of draw in the image here, is to come from the device, externally over the internet, and eventually get translated to a KCD mode. In this case, the web application proxy is doing the lookup in Active Directory to get the Kerberos ticket. We're going to see a demo of that in a few minutes end up with the application getting the traffic over Kerberos. So I feel like this is pretty important as most of the folks, again, expect Kerberos to just work, including in these environments. How many people, just for curiosity, have Kerberos line of business applications within the enterprise that they think they're going to publish to those devices? Is Kerberos important to folks? Okay, cool. The thing I'm not mentioning, I'm not calling out on the slide, but I'm going to just talk to that is other Windows integrated authentication schemes like NTLM specifically. I actually have it in the last bullet there. NTLM is not something that we provide pre-authentication for. That could be an interesting feedback point for us. Again, anyone who wants to give feedback on that specific point is welcome to come here after the presentation and have a discussion with that. NTLM will work, but it'll work with pass-through. You will not get pre-authenticated with NTLM. So browser-based Kerberos works. Claims-based applications, browser-based claims-aware applications work. Obviously, how many people do have claims-aware apps deployed today within their organizations? Some people. Okay. That's sort of always an interesting discussion. Design this sort of discussion for us internally, you know, how much to invest in claims versus Kerberos versus both and all that. So, okay, the other important type of pre-authentication scheme is about Office applications. The Microsoft Office forms-based authentication, that's the FBA implementation for Office to work. So if you think about rich Office clients like Word and PowerPoint, you know, on the device trying to, like if you run them on the device and sort of try to access something, a file that resides over the internet on your corporate SharePoint, file server, things like that, it'll use that protocol. And of course, the modern RESTful pattern of LOB application that we're going to see enterprises do more and more over OAuth, typically, that's supported with peer authentication as well in this release. And that's pretty much the sort of the big four pre-authentication schemes that we have in this release. We're looking forward to kind of follow up with more interesting and common authentication schemes. But to kind of close the loop and get back to the question about Exchange, are we supporting Exchange with pre-authentication? Then the answer is, well, yes. And the kind of we took scoping decisions to, first of all, prioritize those email clients that we think are going to be common on these new types of devices. So, for example, OAuth, Outlook Web Authentication, is fully supported with pre-authentication. That's one of the common questions that we get. Other types of email clients, like Outlook Anywhere, for example, I think we can expect less to be on those types of iPads and Surface devices and more on fully managed laptops. So for Outlook Anywhere specifically, pre-authentication not supported. It'll work with Past Remote, and this is just something, this would be an example for something that we'll have to kind of follow up on in the next release and provide pre-authentication for. Okay, maybe let me pause for a second because the next couple of slides are going to kind of dive more deeply into the technical data flow. So let me see if there's questions about sort of the value and scenarios and pre-authentication. Yes, please. I'll repeat the question. So the question was, since I mentioned that there's tight dependency on ADFS, did I talk about ADFS 2.0 or what? So the dependency is on ADFS that's in this R2 release of Windows Server. Well, I actually broadened my answer a little bit more. And to kind of get all these goodies, what you need to do as a bare minimum is you need to do a couple of things. First of all, you need to upgrade the schema that you're using on your Active Directory domain controller, because I mentioned at the very beginning that there's this new device object that we have in the schema now. If you want to register your device, so you're going to have to modify the schema. That's one. Number two, you have to deploy the R2 version of ADFS that we have, and then you have to use the web application proxy, the work. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, please. Okay, you're going to have to either repeat that or I don't know if we have mics here. Yeah, okay, there you go. Okay, was the question about is web application proxy, does it have to be domain joined?
Correct.
Okay, it was really difficult for me to hear that. Okay, they fixed the mic. Good. So the question was, does it need to be a domain joined? So the short answer is no. It doesn't have to be domain joined unless... The important exception is if you want to do Kerberos. For Kerberos, the way it's implemented is, you know, web application proxy is being trusted for Kerberos delegation, so it has to be domain joined. If you don't want to do Kerberos from the web application proxy, absolutely don't have to be domain joined. Take maybe one more question and then we can continue. Yes, please.
Does it support OAuth and ActiveSync with authentication using certificates?
The question is, does it support OAuth and ActiveSync with certificates? So on the OAuth part, I gave the answer a little bit earlier. Yes, OAuth is supported. ActiveSync is supported in pass-through mode. And client, and I think you're asking about client certificate authentication as well. I was meaning to kind of get back to that. That's not supported in this release. We do not have client certificate authentication in the proxy this release. Again, very high on our list, and we're just going to do that at the latest in the next release. Let me just say it that way.
Thank you.
All right, let me just keep moving, and we'll have more time for questions a little bit later on. So typical network topology environment, you know, we have sort of the DMZ or the perimeter, web application proxy with the ADFS proxy component with it, and of course HTTP, HTTPS. In front of that, you know, you have the load balancer typically in front of the web application proxy server. Now, we don't have any built-in load balancer capabilities or anything like that. I'm just going to say that up front because there's questions around that sometimes as well. Any HTTP load balancer will work Nothing special around that. Again, the sort of the point of being the design point of being simple engineering comes to our help here. We're not sort of bound to NLB or anything like that. At the back end, we have the back end application server that's being accessed. Sometimes there's it's a farm and there's a load balancer in front of that. And again, there's no load balancer capability or anything like that that you get from the proxy for that, for the back-end facing load balancer as well. And then Active Directory, and then ADFS that holds the configuration store for the web application proxy. The reason I mention that is I feel this architectural detail is important because all the configuration, all the state really, when you think of it, for web application proxy really resides in the back end. So what it means is that the web application proxy is stateless. Okay, you don't have to, if you provision more instances of web application proxy, or if you take an instance out and bring an instance back in, you don't have to worry about moving configuration around because we automatically pull the configuration from the back end. The other benefit of that is that once you change configuration at the back end, all the web application proxy instances that connect to that specific ADFS server get the same configuration at once. You don't have to kind of manage. We wanted to kind of be light on the amount of management and operation you need to do on your edge servers. Okay. Let's further drill down and kind of zoom in on the server that runs the web application proxy, and the server could look something like that. It's got a bunch of access services running on it. On the right hand side, we see the RDS gateway. That's a role in Windows Server that can run on that box, provide VDI type access. We can also have the traditional VPN server role running on that box. They're all run side by side, really. And then the web application proxy. So I think the important things to kind of call out here is that, first of all, web application proxy is implemented directly on top of HTTP.sys. Again, it's an architectural detail, but I feel it's an important one because in the past we had products like UEG and like TMG that were built on top of IIS. Now, you get benefits from that, but you also get a little bit of a complexity. Things like array management and extensions and stuff, and the whole dependency in managing IIS. So we don't have it here. We have a lightweight, lean and mean. We'll see that later when we talk about perf and scale. Relatively simple stack that's implemented directly on top of HTTP.sys. Then we have the core layer of web application proxy that really knows to kind of listen on, configure HTTP.sys to listen on URLs, provide that basic value of network isolation, hostname translation, logging and tracing, and then we have that optional higher level layer that knows to deal with pre-authentication. And then we have a full-blown administration stack, if you will, full UI, PowerShell, WMI scripting, the configuration interface, and then integration with Windows Server Manager, and we're going to show a demo of all that in a few minutes. Yes. Yes. So the question was, can we run on the same server direct access? The only tricky point that I can think of with direct access is direct access require the server to be domain joined. So someone asked earlier, can that be? Okay, so you have to take that into account. Direct access requires the server to be domain joined and group policy and all that. So the answer is technically you can. I think people oftentimes will not do that and will kind of prefer to have web application proxy run, not domain joined and not managed by group policies and all that. But you can do that. Okay, so the next set of slides walk through sort of the technical data flow, how the thing works, and we're going to kind of show that visually, and then we'll see that in a demo. And so the basic thing here is that they have in the back end, and I'm going to focus through the sort of the rest of the session here about this scenario of Kerberos application. As we said, that's going to be a major scenario. So let's think about a back-end line of business application, something like SharePoint, for example, that's configured for Kerberos, and let's just call it, you know, it's published internally over HTTP, pure HTTP, WAC WAC LOB. And then we also have ADFS there with WAP, the Web Application Proxy, you know, configured directly to it. That's part of the setup of the environment. You have a relying party within ADFS for Web Application Proxy. And further in the back end, we have Active Directory and the firewalls, Web Application Proxy, and all that. And let's start building the story. The first thing you'll want to do is you'll want to publish your SDS or ADFS so that users could interact with that. And so ADFS is going to expose itself over HTTPS with a fully qualified domain name, something like that. Let's say the sds.fabricom is the name of the company.com, and you're going to publish it as that through the external firewall so that customers could be redirected to that and get access to that. The next thing you'll want is, again, we're adding more elements to the story here. The next thing you want to do is you want to publish externally the access to your LOB application. So there's two things here that I've done. One is, you know, I took this LOB application and created a fully qualified domain name or URL for it over HTTPS and exposed that off of the web application proxy. So HTTPS, LOB, fabricom.com. That's number one. The second thing that I did here, and I'm kind of skipping over a step here, I'm skipping over the device registration step, just for simplicity of the explanation, I'm going to get back to that at the very end and kind of drill in a little bit about the device registration experience. But at the end of the device registration experience, you end up with in Active Directory, an object that represents the device. So that's in Active Directory. And on the device itself, you're going to end up with that certificate that I mentioned earlier on the device. So that's what I'm trying to kind of illustrate in this drawing. And again, I'm skipping the step of how exactly that gets done. I'm going to get back to that and show you how it gets done. So let's further continue. And, you know, the user tries to, and that's going to be the typical flow. There's a request coming in for that line of business application. It's getting redirected over to STS for evaluation. STS or ADFS is doing some computation to see if we actually need to get, you know, if the device needs to be registered for access, to gain access to that application, and if we need to challenge the request to hand over the certificate. In the first handshake, that's exactly what's going to happen. The device is challenged with getting back the certificate, and the certificate is being provided from the device over the web application proxy, or the ADFS proxy in this case, all the way to the back end to ADFS. And ADFS is doing a lookup in Active Directory to see if that device object is actually registered and not expired, and so on and so forth. And if everything goes well, then it grants you back a security token. Security token is passed over the query string, and then the device is redirected again to pass that security token through the application proxy, which does its own comparison and grants, or actually moves the, or routes the traffic back to the line of business application. And we're not done there. This is a Kerberos-based application. You get a 401 challenge, and the web application proxy that is domain joined in this case does a lookup in Active Directory to get back the Kerberos constraint delegation ticket, and with the Kerberos ticket goes finally to that SharePoint application, which now returns the information all the way back through the web application proxy to the user. Now, and you can do that for several different applications, obviously, and those tokens are good for single sign-on as well. And just to complete the picture, let's clean up, do some cleanup here. Just to complete the picture and talk a little bit about device registration flow and how that works. So step back a couple stages here. And again, we have two relying parties now in ADFS, one for web application proxy, the other one for that specific LOB application. And everything is published through web application proxy. And so you'll notice, and you're going to see that in a second, there's another relying party now with ADFS, and that's the device registration service relying party. And this is where you kind of could configure policies for device registration. We kind of touched on that this morning as well. And we, ADFS exposes the device registration service over a fully qualified domain name that's always HTTPS, enterprise enrollment, dot, in this case, fabrica.com. That's going to be the sort of the default endpoint for the device registration service. And it gets exposed over web application proxy as well, so that the device could, you know, could do the registration flow, and again end up with an object in Active Directory and a certificate on the device. That's a visual representation of what's going on. And to kind of complement that, I want to show the actual bits and show you how this looks like. Yeah, I'll switch the screen in a second. Let me just do one more thing. Okay. And I'm going to switch the screen now. So, all right. So, it's a simple demo environment, a bunch of machines. Basically, we have a client machine here. We have a domain control. We're not going to bother showing you the domain control and the new schema and all that. We have a SharePoint application, or actually two. One of them is off right now. And then we have the ADFS server and the web application proxy server at the edge of the network. Let's start with ADFS itself. We're not going to go very heavy into that because we kind of showed some of these concepts in the morning session. But since there is this tight dependency on ADFS, I do want to show you a few things here. It's the typical, you know, the sort of the familiar MMC console of ADFS. The important piece for the purposes of this demo is the relying party trusts. I already have pre-configured a bunch here. I don't know if it's easy to see from the back, but there's the device registration service relying party at the very top. And then we have a second relying party here, which is a SharePoint application that's configured for claims in this case. And also we have, I have pre-configured here another relying party for Kerberos authentication. I'll show you how to do that. There's okay, it looks like the VM is stuck. Oh, there you go. Okay. There was a bit of a delay here. Okay, cool. So the new thing that got added in R2 is this thing. It's add non-claims aware relying party. So that's new, and that's exactly for the Kerberos case. So it's going to, you click that, and it's got its own new wizard flow. So let's just walk through that. I'm going to hit start. And I'm going to give a name to that relying party. Let's just call it, I don't know, TechEd RP demo or something like that. And we need to give it an identifier. Let's just call it Portal 2. And let's just use the company name of Contoso. And we need to add that to the list of RP identifiers. RPs can have more than one identifier. And again, these are sort of standard ADFS concepts. Now, on this screen, I have to choose if I want multi-factor authentication or not. For simplicity, let's just say I don't want multi-factor authentication. And the last thing I'm going to do here is I'm just going to have this checkbox that'll trigger a new sort of experience for adding authentication authorization rules. For this RP, I'm going to choose something simple for demo purposes to permit all users access to this relying party. And that's pretty much it. And we are done. And we're going to see this new RP resident here. So again, the point here was to show that there's a new flow for adding a non-claims aware relying party in ADFS. Let's minimize that machine and let's move over to the web application proxy machine. So here, let's just take a few minutes and kind of do some orientation about what's, you know, how the experience of web application proxy looks like. And so what we're showing here is Windows Server Manager and SANS web application proxy. I should have mentioned that web application proxy is installed as part of the remote access or ARAS server role. So it's a new role service, just like VPN or DA under ARAS. And so you're going to see remote access configured here. And the standard integration, with Windows events and services and the best practices analyzer and all that. We're going to come back to these points and show you how this, you know, for example, BPA works. Like on this specific machine, everything is configured properly, so we don't show anything in BPA. But we're going to talk more about BPA later on and show you the work that we've done there to support for supportability. So the standard way of launching the Remote Access Management Console is by clicking Tools and hitting Remote Access Management. Now, folks who are familiar with VPN and Direct Access Management from Windows Server 2012 should be familiar with this console. It's the same console, and I just happen to have here web application proxy installed. I could have installed VPN and Direct Access on the same box, and those would show up in this console as well. And that's done intentionally because we kind of figured, hey, you know, some organizations, there's this network guy or network IT admin persona that sort of deals with the access services that are deployed within the DMZ. And so that's the console to do that. That's the console to deal with, you know, VPN, Direct Access, and web application proxy. For the simplicity of the demo, we're only going to show web application proxy and not the integration between all these things in the management console. So what do we see here? So as I said, we have web application proxy installed. We can manage its configuration. We can manage its or monitor its operational status. There's a very simple cluster here installed. It's called Cluster Servers, and it's got two nodes only, WAP1 and WAP2. Again, if we had VPN or DA, for example, installed, they could use the same cluster model. But we don't demo that today. So in the main pane, we have the published endpoints. In this case, before the demo, I already configured one published endpoint, as you can see here. Again, I'm not sure if it's easy to see from the back, but it's really pretty simple. There's four main properties that we care about in the UI. One is just a friendly name that you give. The other is the external URL. The third is the backend URL of the application that you're trying to access. And the fourth one is whether it's passed through or ADFS pre-authentication. And there's a bunch of GUI here to do filtering and sorting and kind of come up with your own queries and save them and all that. That's pretty typical for those of you familiar with the previous console that dealt only with VPN and DA. Those things were already there. And then on the right-hand pane is sort of the typical task-oriented, context-sensitive menu. And so let's just take a look at the operational status here to showcase a few things. So I can monitor here the operational status of the cluster. And as you can see, the cluster has one healthy machine that's working, and intentionally for demo purposes, another machine here that's not. It's down pretty much. And so it shows it as, it cannot connect to that machine. We can further drill down and just select the healthy machine and see what's going on that machine. And so, again, that machine runs web application proxy, and the web application proxy in turn runs two internal components, ADFS proxy and the actual web application proxy. Each one of them, you can use that menu to kind of launch their own specific location of, you know, the events in the Windows event viewer and the perf counters. Let's just, since it's brand new technology in Windows Server, let's take a second and just kind of show you. Events are not necessarily interesting here. The only interesting point is to kind of show that we just fully integrated into Windows, as opposed to previous products like UNG and TMG. We can walk through that a little bit later on. I do want to pause a few seconds on perf counters and kind of explain what we've done here. So that's an easy way to configure performance counters for web application proxy. We're not going to walk through all of them, but just real quick, there's a bunch of interesting things. Active requests, for example, is a counter that shows you all the requests that are being handled by the web application proxy instance right now on the system. The backend requests per second gives you the throughput of how many requests are being sent to the backend, which means they passed authentication and they're well-formed and all that. And then the third one, for example, gives you the external requests per second that the proxy receives. And of course, some of them could fail authentication and all that. There, you should expect a delta sometimes between that and the previous one. So, and there's another one for Windows Integrated Authentication Cache. So that's about operational status. And if we go back to the cluster level and just spend some time doing configuration, what we want to do is we want to publish an external, we want to externally publish the endpoint for that Kerberos application that I was talking about. And so there's two ways of doing that. One is to kind of hit publish and fill in a wizard. The other thing is if you want to kind of pre-populate some settings from already published applications, you can just select the application like I'm doing right now and hit publish based on this application. And it's just going to pre-populate. Let's just do something from scratch to keep it kind of clean and simple. And so a fairly simple wizard for publishing. We're going to hit next. And the first thing we're going to answer is whether we want pre-authentication or not. Let's let me show you what happens if you just choose pass through. You need to kind of fill in those properties that I was talking about. So you need to give a friendly name. Let's call it I don't know, Kerberos SharePoint demo. Now the external URL. So I'm gonna start typing a few things here and pause for a few seconds, and we'll see something that pops up. And that's we kind of did some what we call inline validation as you type and try to navigate the wizard to kind of help you with avoiding common mistakes. So I intentionally paused for a couple seconds here, and then we kind of saw these two red warnings here that said, okay, this URL is not valid. You're about to publish something that's not going to... It's gonna fail anyways in a few screens, but before you leave the screen, you better know that there's a problem here that we're seeing. There's two error messages here, one for the external URL and the other one for the backend server URL. As I'm typing the external URL, it fails. Typically, people publish, you know, the same URL that they have for the backend, and so we kind of help you type both. So let's keep going, and let's just call it portal2.contoso.com. I could also do something that's like a full path, something like app 1, vdir 2, or something along those lines. That's fine to publish full URLs like that. It doesn't have to be only the host name. I can also do things like host name translation, as we said. So we could do something like, for example, HTTP and not HTTPS, contoso.com/portal2 or anything else. It could be portal222 or anything of that sort. Okay, let me just revert some of the changes. Portal2, contoso.com. Let me show you one other thing. If we do... ignore that. Okay. The only other sort of validation error that I wanted to show you was that red thing that says now, hey, you're about to publish something over HTTP, and that's not going to work. The wording here is a little bit confusing. We're hoping to fix that soon before we release, but that's the idea of the of that validation. Anyways, there's a bunch of validations here that you kind of get as a helper functionality when you use the UI. So what I'm typing now is I'm typing the external and internal URLs, and the only other thing that's left to do is to select the certificate. There's a bunch of my machine. I'm going to go ahead and select this one, hit next, and I want to show you one thing before we're done, which is, again, we think that's going to be useful for some of the admins in the audience. Before we actually go ahead and publish the application in the UI, the UI actually is architected on top of PowerShell. Everything that you can do in the UI, you can also do directly in PowerShell. There's nothing new with that. That's the sort of the typical way Windows services should work. But we're actually generating here and showing you on the screen the actual screen, the actual script in PowerShell that we're going to call. And you can go ahead and select that and copy that and, you know, paste it into PowerShell and tweak it and change it and all that. We kind of figure that this could be a nice starting point to do things once or for the first time in the UI. Let the UI generate the PowerShell script for you, and then you have the script and you're good to go and modify it any way you want. Now I'm going to hit publish, and that's going to fail. It's going to fail because I already have a published application exactly listening on this specific URL. So let me go back and change the publishing, and just for the heck of it, I'm going to publish something else and call it Portal 3, and this thing should work, hopefully. So that's actually doing the publishing. It succeeded, and the thing I want to show you here is that we actually created a new published application. We call it Kerberos SharePoint Demo, and it's up there, and you can manage that, and you can stop it, and all that. So we're done with this machine. I want to kind of change the view to the client machine, and that's going to be Windows 8.1. And the only thing I'm going to do with this machine is I'm going to go ahead and open up browser and just simply try to access the URL that we published externally. And we get that login page. All right, and that's the we got access to the internal application coming from outside. Let me show you one more thing here in this environment, just for the benefit of those who didn't attend the other sessions. And I'm just going to show you at least the location of the experience that we have in Windows Client 8.1 for doing device registration and MDM enrollment. And it's going to be under, in PC settings, under Network Workplace. You're going to type something like, you know, in this example, John. Your corporate credentials, and then you can hit join to workplace join your device, or you can hit turn on to enroll your device into management via MDM like Windows Intune. And again, I think most of the folks already seen that page in some of the other demos, but I just kind of wanted to show that again since we're on Windows Client now. So that's pretty much it in terms of demo. Let me do a few more slides and then take some questions. So I want to talk a little bit about operability and design considerations and walk through some of the scoping decisions that we've made. as I said, it's part web application proxy is a new thing in Windows Server, part of the RAS server role or remote access server role alongside VPN. And direct access, it's a peer to those technologies. The idea is that the network admin IT persona deals with that console, deals with that box, really, that's deployed on the edge. And so it's got this dependency on ADFS in the back end, but it's packaged within the remote access service. It's managed by Windows Server Manager Remote Access, just like we saw. In the demo, I used extensively UI, but obviously, as I said, there's PowerShell and WMI, just like you'd expect from standard Windows service. Cluster management consists of, I think we talked about clusters already. They're consistent with VPN servers. BPA. We're going to show more about BPA in the next slide, but it was really important for us as a team that does, you know, that puts the technology for the first time in Windows Server. We're going to pay attention to supportability scenarios as well. And so there's best practice analyzer with around 10 rules to kind of help you avoid common deployment and configuration mistakes. We'll talk about that in the next slide. There's a full SCOM, you know, Ops Manager management pack that, again, provides SCOM-level monitoring of the health status of the service and its components, and specifically both the web application proxy and the ADFS proxy components. Standard integration with Windows Event Logs and Trace Logs, again, for supportability. Stateless architecture. I was talking about stateless when I said the config resides in the backend within ADFS. It allows you to scale better, you know, the number of app proxy servers on the edge. And the question around domain join doesn't have to be domain join unless you want Kerberos constrained delegation. Some screenshots, because I don't really have the time to demo those today. But BPA, kind of difficult to see, but it's integrated into the, you know, into the Windows Server Manager. We have those rules. I don't think I have time to run through all of them, but things like whether the service is down, right? The anti-service itself is down. Things like whether ADFS proxy service is down. Things like, you know, you have problems with the certificate. It's expired, it's about to expire, and all those types of certificate issues. We have BPA warnings for those as well. Now, you're using different URLs for internal and external URLs, but you disabled in the configuration host translation, so you're going to have a problem with that publishing to work. Things like that. DA, as we said, requires the machine to be domain joined. And so on and so forth. There's a bunch. We can talk after the session about all these rules, and we're going to continue adding rules to that. And again, the whole idea is to help you avoid, catch as early as possible common mistakes in the configuration. Again, the goal here is not to walk through all the events and the trace log, was just to kind of show that they exist. We can talk about those things again later, but we kind of invested pretty significantly, I would say, in things like trace logs and like full, meaningful event logs and so on, so that this Vivan technology could actually get adopted by customers and used, and if there's issues, people could troubleshoot the system. That's a screenshot of the management pack, health monitoring. As I said, you know, health monitoring for both web application proxy as well as the ADFS proxy. Now, in this case, you know, the screenshot shows you what happens if everything works well and is healthy. If it's not healthy, you're going to get a drill down of what exactly failed and what's the event and all that. Perf. You know, we haven't released yet. We still have a couple of months, and we're working very hard on performance and scalability. Now, there's a goal here. I kept emphasizing the sort of lean and mean, or lean at least, architecture for scale and perf, and things like building the stack directly on top of HTTP.sys. And those things will reflect in the performance of the system. These are not final numbers. We're going to come up and publish final performance and scalability numbers as we're getting closer to shipping the actual product. But even for preview, I think having something like more than 20,000 requests per second working at least in pass-through mode is pretty, I think, pretty good as far as you'd expect from a reverse proxy. And again, there's going to be lots more numbers about CPU usage, and bandwidth and all that, but the internal numbers that we have are looking pretty good. So we're pretty happy about the performance and scalability in this release. So I want to address in my last section, you know, all these questions around UAG, TMG, and all that, because that seems to bother many people, and our team is actually responsible for those products as well. So let's take a few minutes and talk about that. And then stop for questions. You know, I get the questions, hey, are you guys building UAG into Windows? Is that really what you're trying to do with web application proxy? And so not really. So I want to kind of explain that. So UEG is definitely out there. That's the product. That's the mature product that we have out there. Many customers use it and familiar with it. UEG is managing what I would call traditional access scenarios. And also UEG is about a bunch of various access technologies. You know, we were talking at the beginning of the presentation about VPN and direct access and all these things. All of them are being managed by UEG, and that's fine. It's fully supported. We continuously service UEG. We have these service packs every few months. And mainstream support runs through April 2015. And really, we're not here today to talk about anything new with respect to the roadmap of UEG. Web application proxy is sort of the thing that we're going to carry forward. It's slightly more narrowly focused on the modern access scenarios, bring your own device scenarios, selective publishing, pre-authentication of corporate applications to workplace joined devices. Now, I said workplace joined is optional. You can still provide access to devices that do not join the workplace. But the whole design point or the scenario that we care about with web application proxy is slightly more narrow, and that's about the new types of devices with reverse proxy capabilities as well. Not about VPN, it's not about direct access, it's not about VDI. And it's important to realize that web application proxy is really part of a broader access platform that we really presented throughout the week. With the new investments in Active Directory and ADFS and Windows Intune and all these things. So, you know, when people ask me, how do I compare UEG with web application proxy, I think the answer to that is, you know, this is not really an apples-to-apples comparison. You kind of need to think about UEG versus, you know, the new investments in Windows Server and actually even System Center as well with Windows Intune. And so, again, Windows Server, System Center, those are the things, the platforms that we're going to kind of carry forward and invest in light of those focus scenarios that I'm talking about. Direct access and VPN continue. You know, we took the decision to build them. So UEG has those, but we took a decision to really build those in Windows also. And we did that in the previous release in Windows Server 2012 Gold. They're there. We're continuing to evolve them outside of the web application proxy. There's a new value in VPN, specifically in 2012 R2. You're going to see things like application-triggered VPN clients and things like that. In this session, we focused more on web application proxy. But I think the bottom line is when you think about new deployments, the starting point should be Windows Server and System Center, or Windows Server specifically, 2012 R2. You just kind of evaluate your needs and your scenarios with web application proxy and ADFS and AD in mind. And if those absolutely don't work for you and you feel that things are missing, feel free to give us feedback. We kind of want to follow up and build the missing stuff. We gave a few very specific examples today. We were talking about, there was a question here about client certificate authentication. We were talking about pure HTTP publishing, and I think we mentioned a couple other specific examples. We want to hear more, because we do want to improve and follow up and fill in those gaps on the Windows Server platform. Let's see. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, don't attempt to kind of mix and match the two and, you know, deploy UNG and application proxy side by side, either on the same box or dealing with the same data flow. Don't, you know, they're separate. They're separate. Maybe a few words about TMG and ARR. TMG, all folks who deal with TMG know that, you know, that's a product that we declared publicly that it's end of life. Basically, mainstream or the support for that runs through 2020. Many people use it for publishing as well. I mean, it's a firewall, but many people use it for publishing and specifically Exchange. So we did address earlier in the presentation explicitly, you know, Exchange scenarios, and that's important for us. We're going to cover more and more Exchange pre-authentication schemes with the next versions of application proxy. I feel pretty good about, I mean, we were mentioning in the morning that was a short release. for us, you know, we kind of, I feel like we kind of covered the basic flows and clients of Exchange on modern devices. And if you feel like we missed anything critical, come back and give us the feedback. The other server that we occasionally hear about is IIS ARR, Application Request Routing. Now, some people heard about that, and some people kind of ask questions around deploying it, and specifically around link, when we talk about publishing link. Because ARR knows to do full URL translation, and I think some people care about that because you know, you're required to do that if you want to publish link, or at least the latest version of link. And so, again, I just want to be really, really crisp about that to kind of avoid all the confusion around what is the recommended product from Microsoft in terms of reverse proxy and publishing, the recommended product and the intended offering for enterprise customers absolutely is to use web publishing with web application proxy as part now of Windows Server 2012 R2 and the whole conditional access platform and the whole model of workplace joined devices. That's the intended enterprise offering that we have. We know we still have some gaps against other products like ARR or TMG, but we're going to fill up those gaps. So directionally speaking, I don't think there should be any confusion about you know what we're trying to kind of say or do here. And I sort of recommend everyone to kind of stick to that platform and not anything else, or at least start with that when you evaluate your publishing scenarios. Now, I think the last slide that I have today is around, so I think we talked a lot about Windows Intune throughout the presentation. And again, sometimes there's this confusion, hey, do we need to have Windows Intune for the proxy to work? So again, the answer is no. There's this base level of capabilities within the Windows Server platform that gives you those conditional access capabilities. If you want a full-blown solution that manages the devices as well and has a client of the device or management agent of the device to kind of fully manage them and do things like AV and device health and all that, you need to have an MDM service like Windows Intune. And I think enough said already about VPN and DRS in this presentation. So with that, I think we're pretty much done. We have a few minutes for questions, and we're going to be available after the session, either in the room or outside, for more specific questions. Yes. So what's up with that? Okay. Yeah, the question is, I mentioned that there's no specific integration with load balancers, but I still talked about clusters. So how do we think about clusters? So I think it's a great question. You know, one way to think about clusters in this release from web application proxy perspective, as I said, it's a stateless server. The configuration resides in the back end. So really a cluster, in the case of web application proxy, is all the instances of web application proxy that connect to the same back-end ADFS server. So for us, that would be a cluster. There's no, not so much in terms of load balancer clusters. So maybe a slightly different variation of defining a cluster in this case. Yes, please.
With Workplace Join, is WAP a requirement, or can you utilize the publishing from currently UAG or TMG to do it? So if to get Workplace Join to work, do you have to have the web application proxy?
I'll take this. So no, the way to think about that is, those concepts are separate, but the bottom line is in order to publish or to have your device register into the corporate once the device is outside and make it known to the Active Directory, we publish the DRS endpoint over web application proxy. And so, yes, you have to workplace join your device from the external internet, you have to deploy a web application proxy. Now, I'm not exactly sure what we can talk about it after. If there's a flow where you could register, you can bring your device to on-premises and register, get to that DRS endpoint internally and register. I'm not exactly sure, and I think Sen can talk about that.
The simple answer is yes. However, we also publish the protocol interactions between the web application proxy and ADFS. So as part of that, a third-party vendor could look at it and implement something, but you need to support those protocol requirements on HTTP.
And I will just say one more thing. Like, I think, like, if you think about the sort of the flow of the person, I think, you know, people will just have their new, you know, iPads or Surface or whatever, and I don't know that they will bother or that they will be happy if the requirement was that, hey, you have to bring it to the workplace and do some magic on it for the thing to start working. Kind of from you can bootstrap the device from home, from your, you know, your favorite coffee shop or whatever. So that's the thing. I'm not sure if I repeated the question. Do we have to have web application proxy deployed in order to do workplace join? That was the question. Any other questions or comments? Yes, please.
One of the things that TMG had was signature-based IPS inspection. Have you made any APIs making it possible for third-party vendors to do the same on the
You
server?
Need to raise your voice just a little bit. So
okay, sorry. So signature-based IPS was in TMG.
Yeah.
You don't have that now, but have you made it possible for third-party vendors to do that? Or
it's a great question. Let me kind of rephrase it just a little bit. I think the question is around extensibility of the proxy, and more specifically around you know, things like you know, I think what you're sort of suggesting things like you know, deep scanning and you know, AV and, or maybe even DLP things like that. And so the short answer is no. We don't have that solution today. As I said, we wanted to kind of keep it very simple and lean. Definitely thinking about opening an extensibility point. We need to, you know, extensibility is good oftentimes. We have to be concerned about extensibility at the same time, because once you open an extensibility point, like UEG, I think, is a great example. There's lots of things you can extend and customize with UEG, and some people love it. But you see the problems down the road. You know, people do a bunch of different extensions, including direct code injections into the flow of UEG. It becomes difficult to support these things and maintain them forward as you do more and more releases, and people do all sorts of crazy stuff with these extensions. And so, no, we do not have this extensibility interface in this release. We're thinking about doing that, but the way we're thinking about it is to kind of be constrained in the amount of extensibility we're allowing people to do. I'll be interested in hearing more about, you know, sort of the scenario or the requirement you have around that. We can have a discussion after the presentation. Yes, please.
What about flood mitigation features? Like every other web application firewall has it, so it also is on the, not only pre-authentication, so to keep the bad traffic away from the application server. Is there something in there?
If I understand, I'm not sure I understand correctly. I think what I heard you saying is, what about pre-authentication? Do we have pre-authentication services?
No, flood mitigation. Flood mitigation was the question. If there are flood mitigation features.
Flood mitigation. Okay, yeah. I got it. Okay, I understand. So the question was, is there any flood mitigation service as part of the pre-authentication? You know, all the... I'll say that. First of all, you know, when we talk about putting a load balancer in front of web application proxy, I think it's safe to say that typically enterprise customers will put a full-blown network firewall in front of the application proxy as well. You know, we don't have any intention of building firewall capabilities as a first-class feature into web application proxy. That's a non-goal, and so that's number one. Number two, you know, you could expect, this is an internet-facing server or service. Obviously, you could expect that, you know, traditional sort of you know, throttling and you know, flood mitigation that we have in the networking stack of Windows, but we didn't go above and beyond that. We didn't build any special magic, you know, for it. We're not in that business. You should have a firewall in front. That would be the recommendation if you're worried about those types of scenarios. Any other questions? Yes, please.
I was thinking, would it be possible to use it for publishing of a link ADRMS Exchange, and all the services that currently TMG is offering.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that because I'm not sure I got that correctly. Are you asking about what about publishing of Exchange and all the other sort of Office or Microsoft servers that TMG? Okay, so from goal or intention perspective, the intention here is, yes, it's to kind of provide good coverage for those. I think for all these servers, I think, you know, I was talking very early in the presentation about, you know, there's this level of connectivity or reverse proxy services to kind of just publish these services and having the network separation, and that by itself is a good security measure, and all of these scenarios should work. And then there's this extra security service, if you will, that I call pre-authentication, and pre-authentication works for some of them. And I think we kind of covered a little bit, we touched on that throughout the presentation. And so did I answer the question? I'm not sure. Maybe you have other points that I'm not getting to. We're good? Okay, we can talk after the presentation. Yes, please.
In the example of business-to-business federation, does SAML work with this? With this version of ADFS and the web application proxy, and has there been any improvements around home realm discovery?
The question, I think there's a couple questions here. The scenario is business-to-business federation and XAML, and I think you're asking number one, is it working with web application proxy? The answer is yes. And I think you're asking number two, were there any improvements there? And I'm going to defer to Sam from the ADFS team to help me with that.
Support full federation, because the fact that it's supported by ADFS and all the aspects about ADFS in terms of its capabilities. Now, we didn't get to cover this because there was a lot of stuff that we put into ADFS in this release, but we have a series of customization experiences. As one part of the customization of experiences, I think there are two things that you might be interested in, is that as part of that federation, we do suffix-based discovery so that you don't have to have a drop-down list, so it's an inbuilt feature. And the second aspect is that you can do filtering of claims providers for specific applications. So in the example that Chai pointed out, you could take that portal, and if out of your 10 providers, that your claims providers in ADFS, you can say, hey, it's only for those two things. So when they hit the link and they redirect to ADFS, only it'll be one of those two show up as tiles or as organizational suffix-based lookup for that.
Maybe a couple more last questions, and yes, please.
Other than the links regarding other sessions, do you actually have any feeds for information that you're putting out as it's coming out?
Right. The question is, beyond this slide, do we have any other links for additional resources and information? We have a bunch. I'm not sure. Let me see. There's definitely a bunch. Okay, let's do this. Well, this is a good start. There's a bunch more. I mean, you know, with the preview, there's... lots of documentation up there on the web, you know, in TechNet, obviously, about everything that we've talked about this week. Do a Bing search on that, and if that's not successful, send us an email.
On TechNet, you can go to Windows Server, and there's a What's New in Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 R2. So go to the Windows Server 2012 R2 portions, and there's a What's New in Active Directory. And under these, we have a series of scenarios, solution guides, and get started step by step so that you can actually go validate that in a test environment and try it out.
And the other thing I'll mention is there's going to be blogs or more blog posts coming along. So you can expect to see lots of stuff that's already now on the internet, and there's going to be much more, and that's our emails over there. And I think we're being thrown out of the room because we have to leave room for the next presenter, but I'm available for further questions either here or in the hallway. Thanks very much.